Her eyes linger on his hand, still in mine. For once, I don't feel her try to push her way into my thoughts. She's in Maven's head right now, not mine. "Nothing I can't handle," Maven says, tightening his grip on me like I'm some kind of anchor. She raises an eyebrow, not believing a word he says, but doesn't question him. I doubt she really questions anyone. She knows all the answers.
"Best hurry up, Lady Marina, or you'll be late for luncheon," she purrs, finally turning her ghostly eyes on me.
And then it's my turn to hold on to Maven.
"And take a little more care in your training sessions. Red blood is just so hard to clean up."
"You would know," I snap, remembering Shade, "because no matter how hard you try to hide it, I see it all over your hands." Her eyes widen, surprised at my outburst. I don't think anyone's ever spoken to her this way, and it makes me feel like a conqueror. But it doesn't last long. Suddenly, my body twitches backward, throwing itself into the passage wall with a resounding smack. She makes me dance like a puppet on violent strings. Every bone rattles and my neck cracks, slamming my head back until I see icy blue stars. No, not stars. Eyes. Her eyes.
"Mother!" Maven shouts, but his voice sounds far away. "Mother, stop!"
A hand closes around my throat, holding me in place as control of my own body ebbs away. Her breath is sweet on my face, too sweet to stand.
"You will not speak to me like that again," Ilara says, too angry to bother whispering in my head.
Her grip tightens, and I couldn't even agree with her if I wanted to. Why doesn't she just kill me? I wonder as I gasp for breath. If I'm such a burden, such a problem, why doesn't she just kill me?
"That's enough," Maven roars, the heat of his anger pulsing through the passage.
Even through the hazy darkness eating at my vision, I see him pull her off me with surprising strength and boldness. Her ability's hold on me breaks, letting me slump against the wall. Ilara almost stumbles herself, reeling with shock. Now her glare turns on Maven, on her own son standing against her.
"Return to your schedule, Mare," he seethes, not breaking eye contact with his mother.
I don't doubt she's screaming in his head, scolding him for protecting me.
"Go!"
Heat crackles all around, radiating off his skin, and for a moment I'm reminded of Cal's guarded temper. It seems Maven hides a fire as well, an even stronger one, and I don't want to be around when it explodes. As I scramble away, trying to put as much distance as I can between myself and the Queen, I can't help but look back at them. They stare at each other, two pieces squaring off in a game I don't understand. Back in my room, the maids wait silently, another gilded dress laid across their arms. While one slips me into the spectacle of silk and purple gemstones, the others fix my hair and makeup. As usual, they don't say a word, even though I look frantic and harried after such a morning. Lunch is a mixed affair. Usually the women eat together to discuss the upcoming weddings and all the silly things rich ladies talk about. But today is different. We're back on the terrace overlooking the river, the red uniforms of servants floating through the crowd. But there are far more military uniforms than ever before. Seems like we're dining with a full legion. Cal and Maven are there as well, both glittering in their medals, and they smile through pleasant conversation while the king himself shakes hands with the soldiers. All the soldiers are young, in gray uniforms cut with silver insignia, nothing like the ratty red fatigues my brothers and any other Reds get when they're conscripted. These silvers are going to war, yes, but not to the real fighting. They're the sons and daughters of important people, and to them, the war is just another place to visit, another step in their training. To us, to me once, it is a dead end. It is doom. But I still have to do my duty, to smile and shake their hands and thank them for their brave service. Each word tastes bitter, until I have to duck away from the crowd to an alcove half hidden by plants. The noise of the crowd still rises with the midday sun, but I can breathe again, for a second at least.
"Everything okay?"
Cal stands over me,
looking worried but strangely relaxed. He likes being around soldiers. I suppose it's his natural habitat. Even though I want to disappear, my spine straightens. I'm not a fan of beauty pageants. He frowns.
Mayor, they're going to the front. I think you of all people would want to give them a proper send-off.
The laugh escapes me like gunfire. What part of my life makes you think I'd care about these brats going off to war like it's some kind of vacation? Just because they've chosen to go doesn't make them any less brave.
Well, I hope they enjoy their barracks and supplies and reprieves and all the things my brothers were never given.
I doubt these willing soldiers will ever want for so much as a button. Even though he looks like he wants to yell at me, Cal swallows the urge. Now that I know what his temper is capable of, I'm surprised he can keep himself in check at all.
This is the first completely Silver Legion going into the trenches, he says evenly. They're going to fight with the Reds, dressed as Reds, serving with Reds. The Lakelanders won't know who they are when they get to the choke, and when the bombs fall, when the enemy tries to break the line, they're going to get more than they bargained for. The Shadow Legion will take them all.
Suddenly I feel hot and cold at the same time.
Original.
But Cal doesn't gloat. Instead, he looks sad.
You gave me the idea.
What?
When you fell into Queen's trial, no one knew what to do. I'm sure the Lakelanders will feel the same.
Though I try to speak, no sound comes out. I've never been a point of inspiration for anything, let alone combat maneuvers.
Cal stares at me like he wants to say more, but he doesn't speak.
Neither of us knows what to say. A boy from our training, the Windweaver Oliver, claps a hand on Cal's shoulder, while the other clutches a sloshing drink. He wears a uniform, too. He's going to fight.
What's with the hiding, Cal?
He chuckles, gesturing to the crowd around us.
Next to the Lakelanders, this punch will be easy.
Cal meets my eyes, a silver blush tinging his cheeks.
I'll take the Lakelanders any day, he replies, his eyes never leaving mine.
You're going with them? Oliver answers for Cal, smiling much too wide for a boy going off to war.
Going? He says. Cal's leading us! His own legion, all the way to the front!
Slowly, Cal shifts out of Oliver's grip. The drunk Windweaver doesn't seem to notice and keeps babbling.
He'll be the youngest general in history and the first prince to fight on the lines.
And the first to die, a morose voice in my head whispers. Against my better instincts, I reach out to Cal. He doesn't pull away from me, allowing me to hold his arm. Now he doesn't look like a prince or a general or even a Silver, but that boy at the bar. The one who wanted to save me. My voice is small but strong.
When?
When you leave for the capital. After the ball. You'll go south, he murmurs, and I'll go north.
A cold shock of fear ripples through me, like when Killorn first told me he was going to fight.
But Killorn is a fisher boy, a thief, someone who knows how to survive, how to slip through the cracks. Not like Cal. He's a soldier. He'll die if he has to. He'll bleed for his war. And why this frightens me, I don't know. Why I care, I can't say.
With Cal on the lines, this war will finally be over. With Cal, we can win, Oliver says, grinning like a fool.
Again, he takes Cal by the shoulder, but this time he steers him away, back toward the party, leaving me behind. Someone presses a cold drink into my hand, and I down it in a single gulp.
Easy there, Maven mutters.
Still thinking about this morning. No one saw your face. I checked with the sentinels. But that's the farthest thing from my mind as I watch Cal shake hands with his father. He pastes a magnificent smile on his face, donning a mask only I can see through. Maven follows my gaze and my thoughts. He wanted to do this. It was his choice.
That doesn't mean we have to like it. My son, the general, King Tiberius booms, his proud voice cutting through the din of the party.
For a second when he pulls Cal close, putting an arm around his son, I forget he's a king. I almost understand Cal's need to please him. What would I give to see my mother look at me like that, back when I was nothing but a thief? What would I give now? This world is silver, but it is also gray. There is no black and white. When someone knocks at my door that night, long after dinner, I'm expecting Walsh and another cup of secret message tea. But Cal stands there instead. Without his uniform or armor, he looks like the boy he is. Barely 19, on the edge of doom or greatness, or both. I shrink in my pajamas, wishing very much for a robe. Cal, what do you need? He shrugs, smirking a little bit.
Evangeline almost killed you in the ring today.
So?
So, I don't want her to kill you on the dance floor.
Did I miss something? Are we going to be fighting at the ball? He laughs, leaning against the doorframe. But his feet never enter my room. Like he can't. Or he shouldn't. You're going to be his brother's wife, and he's going to war.
If you know how to dance properly, you won't have to.
I remember mentioning how I can't dance for my life, let alone under Blanos's terrible direction. But how can Cal help me here? And why would he want to?
I'm a surprisingly good teacher, he adds, smiling crookedly.
When he stretches out a hand to me, my body shivers. I know I shouldn't. I know I should shut the door and not go down this road. But he's leaving to fight, maybe to die. Shaking, I put my hand in his and let him pull me out of my room. 18. Moonlight falls on the floor, bright enough for us to see by. In the silvery light, the red blush in my skin is barely visible. I look the same as a silver. Chairs scrape along the wood floor as Cal rearranges the sitting room, clearing space for us to practice. The chamber is secluded, but the hum of cameras is never far away. Ilara's men are watching, but no one comes to stop us, or rather, to stop Cal. He pulls a strange device, a little box, out of his jacket and sets it in the middle of the floor. He stares at it expectantly, waiting for something. Can that thing teach me how to dance? He shakes his head, still smiling.
No, but it'll help.
Suddenly, a pulsing beat explodes from the box, and I realize it's a speaker. Like the ones in the arena back home, only this is for music, not battle. Life. Not death. The melody is light and quick, like a heartbeat. Across from me, Cal smiles wider, and his foot taps in time. I can't resist, my own toes wiggling with the music. It's so bouncy and upbeat. Not at all like the cold, metallic music of Blanos' classroom, or the sorrowful songs of home. My feet slide along, trying to remember the steps Lady Blanos taught me.
Don't worry about that, just keep moving.
Cal laughs. A drumbeat trills over the music, and he spins, humming along. For the first time, he looks like he doesn't have the weight of a throne on his shoulders. I feel it, too, as my fears and worries lift, if only for a few minutes. This is a different kind of freedom, like flying along on Cal's cycle. Cal's much better at this than me, but he still looks like a fool. I can only imagine how idiotic I must appear. Still, I'm sad when the song ends. As the notes fade away into the air, it feels like I'm falling back to reality. Cold understanding creeps through me. I shouldn't be here. This probably isn't the best idea, Cal. He cocks his head, pleasantly confused.
Why's that?
He's really going to make me say it. I'm not even supposed to be alone with Maven. I stumble over the words, feeling myself flush. I don't know if dancing with you in a dark room is exactly okay. Instead of arguing, Cal just laughs and shrugs. Another song, slower, with a haunting tune, fills the room.
The way I see it, I'm doing my brother a favor.
Then he grins crookedly.
Unless you want to step on his feet all night?
I have excellent footing, thank you very much, I say, crossing my arms.
Slowly, softly, he takes my hand.
Maybe in the ring, he says. The dance floor, not so much.
I look down to watch his feet, moving in time with the music. He pulls me along, forcing me to follow, and despite my best efforts, I stumble against him. He smiles, happy to prove me wrong. He's a soldier at heart, and soldiers like to win.
This is the same timing as most of the songs you'll hear at the ball. It's a simple dance, easy to learn.
I'll find some way to mess it up, I grumble, allowing him to push me around the floor. Our feet trace a rough box, and I try not to think about his closeness or the calluses of his hands. To my surprise, they feel like mine, rough, with years of work.
You might, he murmurs, all his laughter gone.
I'm used to Cal being taller than me, but he seems smaller tonight. Maybe it's the darkness, or maybe it's the dance. He seems like he did when I first met him. Not a prince, but a person. His eyes linger on my face, tracing over where my wound was.
Maven fixed you up nicely.
There's an odd bitterness to his voice. It was Julian. Julian and Sarah Skonos. Though Cal doesn't react as strongly as Maven did, his jaw tightens all the same.
Why don't you two like her?
Maven has his reasons, good reasons, he mumbles. But it's not my story to tell, and I don't dislike Sarah. I don't like thinking about her.
Why? What's she done to you?
Not to me, he sighs. She grew up with Julian and my mother.
His voice drops at the mention of his mom. She was her best friend, and when she died, Sarah didn't know how to grieve. Julian was a wreck, but Sarah...
He trails off, wondering how to continue. Our steps slow until we stop, frozen as the music echoes around us.
I don't remember my mother, he says sharply, trying to explain himself. I wasn't even a year old when she died. I only know what my father tells me, and Julian, and neither of them like to talk about her at all.
I'm sure Sarah could tell you about her if they were best friends.
Sarah Skonos can't speak, Mare.
At all? Cal continues slowly, in the level, calm voice his father uses.
She said things she shouldn't have. Terrible lies. And she was punished for it.
Horror bleeds through me. Can't speak.
What did she say?
In a single heartbeat, Cal goes cold under my fingers. He draws back, stepping out of my arms as the music finally dies. With quick motions, he pockets the speaker, and there is nothing but our beating hearts to fill the silence.
I don't want to talk about her anymore.
He breathes heavily. His eyes seem oddly bright, flickering between me and the windows full of moonlight. Something twists in my heart. The pain in his voice hurts me.
Okay.
With quick, deliberate steps, he moves toward the door like he's trying very hard not to run. But when he turns back around and faces me across the room, he looks the same as usual. Calm, collected, detached.
Practice your steps, he says, sounding very much like Lady Blanos. Same time, tomorrow.
And then he's gone, leaving me alone in a room full of echoes.
What the hell am I doing? I mutter to no one but myself.
I'm halfway to my bed before I realize something is very wrong with my room. The cameras are off. Not a single one hums at me, seeing with electric eyes, recording everything I do. But unlike the outage before, everything else around me still buzzes along. Electricity still pulses through the walls, to every room but mine.
Farley.
But instead of the revolutionary, Maven steps out of the darkness. He throws aside the curtains, letting in enough moonlight to see by.
Late night walk, he says with a bitter smile.
My mouth falls open, struggling for words.
You know you're not supposed to be in here.
I force a smile, hoping to calm myself.
Lady Blanos will be scandalized. She'll punish us both.
Mother's men owe me a favor or two, he says, pointing to where the cameras are hidden. Blanos won't have evidence to convict. Somehow that doesn't comfort me. Instead, I feel shivers run over my skin. Not in fear, though, but anticipation. The shivers deepen, electrifying my nerves like my lightning, as Maven takes measured steps toward me. He watches me blush with what looks like satisfaction. "Sometimes I forget," he murmurs, letting a hand touch my cheek. It lingers, like he can feel the color that pulses in my veins. "I wish they wouldn't have to paint you up every day." My skin buzzes under his fingers, but I try to ignore it. That makes two of us. His lips twist, trying to form a smile, but it just won't come. "What's wrong?" Farley made contact again. He draws back, shoving his hands into his pockets to hide trembling fingers. "You weren't here." "Just my luck." "What did she say?" Maven shrugs. He walks to the window, staring out at the night sky. "She spent most of her time asking questions." "Targets." She must have pressed him again, asking for information Maven didn't want to give. I can tell by the droop of his shoulders, the tremor in his voice, that he said more than he wanted to. A lot more. "Who?" My mind flies to the many Silvers I've met here, the ones who have been kind to me, in their own way. Would any of them be a sacrifice to her revolution? Who would be marked? "Maven, who did you give up?" He spins around, a ferocity I've never seen flashing in his eyes. For a second, I'm afraid he might burst into flames. "I didn't want to do it, but she's right. We can't sit still. We have to act. And if that means I'm going to give her people, I'm going to do it. I won't like it, but I will, and I have." Like Cal, he draws a shaky breath in an attempt to calm himself. "I sit on councils with my father, for taxes and security and defense. I know who will be missed by the Silvers. I gave her four names." "Who?" "Rinaldi Rall, Ptolemy Samos, Ellen Macanthos, Bellicose Larilan." A sigh escapes me, before I feel myself nod. These deaths will not be hidden. Evangeline's brother, the Colonel? They will be missed, indeed. "Colonel Macanthos knew your mother was lying. She knows about the other attack. She commands a half-legion and heads the war council. Without her, the front will be a mess for months." "The front?" "Cal, his legion." Maven nods. "My father will not send his heir to war after this. An attack so close to home, I doubt he'll even let him out of sight of the capital." "So her death will save Cal, and help the guard. Shade died for this. His cause is mine now." "Two birds with one stone," I breathe, feeling hot tears threaten to fall. "As difficult as this might be, I'll trade her life for Cal's. I'll do it 1,000 times. "Your friend's part of this, too." My knees shake, but I manage to keep myself upright. I alternate between anger and fear as Maven explains the plan with a heavy, hardened heart. "And what if we fail?" I ask when he finishes, finally speaking aloud the words he's been skirting around. He barely shakes his head. "That won't happen." "But what if we do?" "I'm not a prince. My life has not been charming. I know to expect the worst out of everything and everyone." "What happens if we fail, Maven?" His breath rattles in his chest as he inhales, fighting to remain calm. "Then we'll be traitors, both of us. Tried for treason, convicted, and killed." During my next lesson with Julian, I can't concentrate. I can't focus on anything but what's coming. So much can go wrong, and so much is at stake. My life, Killorn's, Maven's, we're all putting our necks on the line for this. "It's really not my business, but," Julian begins, his voice startling me, "you seem, well, very attached to Prince Maven." I almost laugh in relief, but I can't help but feel stung at the same time. Maven's the last person I should be wary of in this pit of snakes. Just the suggestion makes me bristle. "I am engaged to him," I reply, trying my best not to snap. But instead of letting it drop, Julian leans forward. His placid demeanor usually soothes me, but today it's nothing but frustrating.
I'm just trying to help you. Maven is his mother's son.
This time, I really do snap. You don't know a thing about him. Maven's my friend. Maven's risking more than me. Judging him by his parents is like judging me for my blood. Just because you hate the king and queen doesn't mean you can hate him too. Julian stares at me, his gaze level and full of fire. When he speaks, his voice sounds more like a growl. I hate the king because he couldn't save my sister, because he replaced her with that viper. I hate the queen because she ruined Scaris Skonos, because she took the girl I loved and broke her apart, because she cut Sarah's tongue out.
And then lower, a lament. She had such a beautiful voice.
A wave of nausea washes over me. Suddenly, Sarah's painful silence, her sunken cheeks, make sense. No wonder Julian had her heal me. She couldn't tell anyone the truth. But my words are small and hoarse, like it's my voice being taken away. She's a healer.
Skin healers can't heal themselves, and no one would cross the queen's punishment. So Sarah has to live like that, shamed, forever.
His voice echoes with memories, each one worse than the last.
Silvers don't mind pain, but we are proud. Pride, dignity, honor, those are things no ability can replace.
As terrible as I feel for Sarah, I can't help but fear for myself. They cut her tongue out for something she said. What will they possibly do to me?
You forget yourself, little lightning girl.
The nickname feels like a slap in the face, shocking me back to reality.
This world is not your own. Learning to curtsy has not changed that. You don't understand the game we're playing.
Because this isn't a game, Julian. I push his book of records toward him, shoving the list of dead names into his lap. This is life and death. I'm not playing for a throne or a crown or a prince. I'm not playing at all. I'm different.
You are, he murmurs, running a finger over the pages. And that's why you're in danger from everyone. Even Maven. Even me. Anyone can betray anyone.
His mind drifts, and his eyes cloud over. In this light, he looks old and gray. A bitter man haunted by a dead sister, in love with a broken woman, doomed to teach a girl who can do nothing but lie. Over his shoulder, I glimpse the map of what was, of before. This whole world is haunted. And then, the worst thought I've ever had comes. Shade is already my ghost. Who else will join him?
Make no mistake, my girl, he finally breathes. You are playing the game as someone's pawn.
I don't have the heart to argue. Think what you want, Julian. I'm no one's fool. Ptolemus Samos, Colonel Macanthos. Their faces dance in my head as Cal and I spin across the floor of the sitting room. Tonight the moon is shrinking, fading away, but my hope has never been stronger. The ball is tomorrow. And afterward, well, I'm not sure where that path might go. But it will be a different path, a new road to lead us toward a better future. There will be collateral damage, injuries and deaths we can't avoid, as Maven put it. But we know the risks. If all goes to plan, the Scarlet Guard will have raised its flag where everyone can see. Farley will broadcast another video after the attack, detailing our demands. Equality, liberty. Freedom. Next to all-out rebellion, it sounds like a good deal. My body dips, moving toward the floor in a slow arc that makes me yelp. Cal's strong arms close around me, pulling me back up in an easy second.
Sorry, he says, half embarrassed. Thought you were ready for it.
I'm not ready, I'm scared. I force myself to laugh, to hide what I can't show him. Nope, my fault. Mind wandered off again. He isn't easy to chase off and dips his head a little,
looking me in the eyes.
Still worried about the ball?
More than you know.
One step at a time, that's the best you can do.
Then he laughs at himself, moving us back into simpler steps.
I know it's hard to believe, but I wasn't always the best dancer either.
How shocking, I answer, matching his smile. I thought princes were born with the ability to dance and make idle conversation.
He chuckles again, quickening our pace with the movement. Not me. If I had my way, I'd be in the garage or the barracks, building and training. Not like Maven. He's twice the prince I'll ever be.
I think of Maven, of his kind words, perfect manners, impeccable knowledge of court, all the things he pretends to be to hide his true heart. Twice the prince indeed.
But he'll only ever be a prince, I mutter, almost lamenting at the thought. And you'll be king.
His voice drops to meet my own, and something dark shadows his gaze. There's a sadness in him, growing stronger every day. Maybe he doesn't like war as much as I think.
Sometimes I wish it didn't have to be that way.
He speaks softly, but his voice fills my head. Though the ball looms on tomorrow's horizon, I find myself thinking more about him and his hands and the faint smell of wood smoke that seems to follow Cal wherever he goes. It makes me think of warmth, of autumn, of home. I blame my rapidly beating heart on the melody, the music that brims with so much life. Somehow, this night reminds me of Julian's lessons, his histories of the world before our own. That was a world of empires, of corruption, of war, and more freedom than I've ever known. But the people of that time are gone, their dreams in ruin, existing only in smoke and ash.
It's our nature, Julian would say. We destroy. It's the constant of our kind. No matter the color of blood, man will always fall.
I didn't understand that lesson a few days ago, but now, with Cal's hands in mine, guiding me with the lightest touch, I'm beginning to see what he meant. I can feel myself falling. Are you really going to go with the Legion? Even the words make me afraid. He barely nods.
A general's place is with his men.
A prince's place is with his princess. With Evangeline, I add hastily.
Good one, Mare, my mind screams.
The air around us thickens with heat, though Cal doesn't move at all.
She'll be all right, I think. She's not exactly attached to me. I won't miss her either.
Unable to meet his gaze, I focus on what's right in front of me. Unfortunately, that happens to be his chest and a much too thin shirt. Above me, he takes a ragged breath. Then his fingers are under my chin, tipping my head up to meet his gaze. Gold flame flickers in his eyes, reflecting the heat beneath.
I'll miss you, Mare.
As much as I want to stand still, to stop time and let this moment last forever, I know it's not possible. Whatever I might feel or think, Cal is not the prince I'm promised to. More important, he's on the wrong side. He's my enemy. Cal is forbidden. So, with hesitant, reluctant steps, I back away, out of his grasp and out of the circle of warmth I've gotten so used to. I can't, is all I can manage, though I know my eyes betray me. Even now I can feel tears of anger and regret, tears I swore not to cry. But maybe the prospect of going off to war has made Cal bold and reckless, things he never was before. He takes me by the hand, pulling me to him. He's betraying his only brother. I'm betraying my cause, Maven, and myself, but I don't want to stop. Anyone can betray anyone. His lips are on mine, hard and warm and pressing. The touch is electrifying, but not like I'm used to. This isn't a spark of destruction, but a spark of life. As much as I want to pull away, I just can't do it. Cal is a cliff, and I throw myself over the edge, not bothering to think of what it could do to us both. One day he'll realize I'm his enemy, and all this will be a far-gone memory. But not yet.
19. It takes hours to paint and polish me into the girl I'm supposed to be, but it seems like just a few minutes. When the maids stand me up in front of the mirror, silently asking for my approval, I can only nod at the girl staring back at me from the glass. She looks beautiful and terrified by what's to come, wrapped in shimmering silk chains. I have to hide her, the scared girl. I have to smile and dance and look like one of them. With great effort, I push my fear away. Fear will get me killed. Maven waits for me at the end of the hall, a shadow in his dress uniform. The charcoal black makes his eyes stand out, vibrantly blue against pale white skin. He doesn't look scared at all, but then, he's a prince. He's silver. He won't flinch. He extends an arm toward me, and I gladly take it. I expect him to make me feel safe or strong, or both, but his touch reminds me of Cal and our betrayal. Last night comes into sharper focus, until every breath stands out in my head. For once, Maven doesn't notice my unease. He's thinking about more important things. "You look beautiful," he says quietly, nodding down at my dress. I don't agree with him. It's a silly, overdone thing, a complication of purple jewels that sparkle whenever I turn, making me look like a glittery bug. Still, I'm supposed to be a lady tonight, a future princess, so I nod and smile gratefully. I can't help but remember that my lips, now smiling for Maven, were kissing his brother last night. I just want this to be over. It won't end tonight, Mare. This won't be over for a long time. You know that, right? He speaks like someone much older, much wiser, not like a 17-year-old boy. When I hesitate, truly not knowing how to feel, his jaw tightens. "Mare," he prods, and I can hear the tremors in his voice. "Are you afraid, Maven?" My words are weak, a whisper. "I am." His eyes harden, shifting into blue steel. "I'm afraid of failing. I'm afraid of letting this opportunity pass us by, and I'm afraid of what happens if nothing in this world ever changes." He turns hot under my touch, driven by an inner resolve. That scares me more than dying. It's hard not to be swept away by his words, and I nod along with him. How can I back out? I will not flinch. "Rise," he murmurs, so low I barely hear him. Red as the dawn. His grip tightens on me as we come to the hall in front of the lifts. A troop of sentinels guards the king and queen, both waiting for us. Cal and Evangeline are nowhere to be found, and I hope they stay away. The longer I don't have to look at them together, the happier I'll be. Queen Alara wears a sparkling monstrosity of red, black, white, and blue, displaying the colors of her house and her husband's. She forces a smile, staring right through me to her son. "Here we go," Maven says, letting go of my hand to stand at his mother's side. My skin feels strangely cold without him. "So, how long do I have to be here?" He forces a whine into his voice, playing his part well. The more he can keep her distracted, the better our chances. One poke into the wrong head and everything will go up in smoke. And get us all killed for good measure. "Maven, you can't just come and go as you please. You have duties and you'll stay as long as you're needed." She fusses over him, adjusting his collar, his medals, his sleeves, and for a moment, it takes me off guard. This is a woman who invaded my thoughts, who took me away from my life, who I hate. And still there's something good. She loves her son. And for all her faults, Maven loves her. King Tiberius, on the other hand, doesn't seem bothered by Maven at all. He barely glances his way. "The boy's just bored. Not enough excitement in his day, not like back at the front," he says, running a hand over his trimmed beard. "You need a cause, Mavy." For a brief moment, Maven's annoyed mask drops. "I have one," his eyes scream. But he keeps his mouth shut. "Cal's got his legion. He knows what he's doing, what he wants.
You need to figure out what you're going to do with yourself, eh?
Yes, Father, Maven says. Though he tries to hide it, a shadow crosses his face. I know that look very well. I used to wear it myself, when my parents would hint at me to be more like Gisa, even though that was impossible. I went to sleep hating myself, wishing I could change, wishing I could be quiet and talented and pretty like her. There's nothing that hurts more than that feeling. But the king doesn't notice Maven's pain, just like my parents never noticed mine. I think helping me fit in here is cause enough for Maven, I say, hoping to draw the king's disapproving eye away. When Tiberius turns to me, Maven sighs and shoots me a grateful smile.
And what a job he's done, the king replies, looking me over.
I know he's remembering the poor red girl who refused to bow to him.
From what I hear, you're close to a proper lady now.
But the smile he forces doesn't reach his eyes, and there's no mistaking the suspicion there. He wanted to kill me back in the throne room, to protect his crown and the balance of his country, and I don't think the urge will ever fade away. I'm a threat, but I'm also an investment. He'll use me when he wants, and kill me when he must. I've had good help, my king. I bow, pretending to be flattered. Even though I don't care what he thinks. His opinion isn't worth the rust on my father's wheelchair.
Are we just about ready? Cal's voice says, shattering my thoughts.
My body reacts, spinning around to see him enter the hall. My stomach churns, but not with excitement or nerves or any of the things silly girls talk about. I feel sick with myself, with what I let happen, with what I wanted to happen. Though he tries to hold my gaze, I tear my eyes away, to Evangeline hanging off his arm. She's wearing metal again, and she manages to smirk without moving her lips.
Your Majesties, she murmurs, dipping into a maddeningly perfect curtsy.
Tiberius smiles at her, his son's bride, before clapping a hand down on Cal's shoulder.
Just waiting on you, son, he chortles.
When they stand next to each other, the family resemblance is undeniable. Same hair, same red-gold eyes, even the same posture. Maven watches, his blue eyes soft and thoughtful, while his mother keeps her grip on his arm. With Evangeline on one side and his father on the other, Cal can't do much more than meet my eyes. He nods, slightly, and I know it's the only greeting I deserve. Despite the decorations, the ballroom looks the same as it did more than a month ago, when the queen first pulled me into this strange world, when my name and identity were officially stripped away. They struck a blow against me here, and now it's my turn to strike back. Blood will spill tonight. But I can't think of that now. I have to stand with the others, to speak with the 100 members of court lined up to trade words with royalty, and one jumped-up red liar. My eyes flit down the line, looking for the marked ones, Maven's targets given to the guard, the sparks to light a fire. Renald, the colonel, Bellicose, and Ptolemus, the silver-haired, dark-eyed brother of Evangeline. He is one of the first to greet us, standing just behind his severe father, who hurries along to his daughter. When Ptolemus approaches me, I fight the urge to be sick. Never have I done anything so difficult as looking into the eyes of a dead man walking. My congratulations, he says, his voice hard as rock. The hand he extends is just as firm. He doesn't wear a military uniform, but a suit of black metal that fits together in smooth, gleaming scales. He's a warrior, but not a soldier. Like his father before him, Ptolemus leads the Archeon City Guard, protecting the capital with his own army of officers. The head of a snake, Maven called him before. Cut him down and the rest will die. His hawkish eyes are on his sister, even while he holds my hand. He lets me go in a hurry, quickly passing by Maven and Cal before embracing Evangeline in a rare display of affection. I'm surprised their stupid outfits don't get stuck together. If all goes to plan, he'll never hug his sister again. Evangeline will have lost a brother, just like me. Even though I know that pain firsthand,
I can't bring myself to feel sorry for her, especially not with the way she holds on to Cal. They look like complete opposites, he in his simple uniform, while she glitters like a star in a dress of razor spikes. I want to kill her. I want to be her. But there's nothing I can do about that. Evangeline and Cal are not my problem tonight. As Ptolemus disappears and more people pass with cold smiles and sharp words, it gets easier to forget myself. House Ral greets us next, led by the lithe, languid movements of Ara the panther. To my surprise, she bows lowly to me, smiling as she does so. But there's something strange about it, something that tells me she knows more than she lets on. She passes without a word, sparing me from another interrogation. Sonia follows her grandmother, arm in arm with another target, Rinaldi Rall, her cousin. Maven told me he's a financial advisor, a genius who keeps the army funded with taxes and trade schemes. If he dies, so does the money, and so will the war. I'm willing to trade one tax collector for that. When he takes my hand, I can't help but notice his eyes are frozen and his hands are soft. Those hands will never touch mine again. It's not as easy to dismiss Colonel Macanthos when she approaches. The scar on her face stands out sharply, especially tonight when everyone seems so polished. She might not care for the guard, but she didn't believe the queen either. She wasn't ready to swallow the lies being spoon-fed to the rest of us. Her grip is strong as she shakes my hand. For once, someone isn't afraid I'll break like glass. Every happiness to you, Lady Marina. I can see this one suits you. She jerks her head toward Maven. Not like fancy Samos, she adds in a playful whisper. She'll make a sad queen and you a happy princess. Mark my words. Marked, I breathe. I manage to smile, even though the colonel's life will soon be at an end. No matter how many kind words she says, her minutes are numbered. When she moves on to Maven, shaking his hand and inviting him to inspect troops with her in a week or so, I can tell he's just as affected. After she's gone, his hand drops to mine, giving me a reassuring squeeze. I know he regrets naming her, but like Rinald, like Ptolemus, her death will serve a purpose. Her life will be worth it all in the end. The next target comes from much farther down the line, from a lower house. Bellicose Larilan has a jolly grin, chestnut hair, and sunset-colored clothes to match his house colors. Unlike the others I've greeted tonight, he seems warm and kind. The smile behind his eyes is as real as his handshake. A pleasure, Lady Marina. He inclines his head in greeting, polite to a fault. I look forward to many years in your service. I smile for him, pretending that there will be many years to come. But the facade becomes harder to hold as the seconds drag on. When his wife appears, leading a pair of twin boys, I want to scream. Barely 4 years old and yowling like puppies, they clamber around their father's legs. He smiles softly, a private smile just for them. A diplomat, Maven called him, an ambassador to our allies in Piedmont, far to the south. Without him, our ties to that country and their army would be cut off, forcing Norta to stand alone against our red dawn. He's another sacrifice we must make, another name to throw away. And he's a father. He's a father, and we're going to kill him. Thank you, Bellicose, Maven says, holding out his hand for him to shake, trying to draw the Larilans away before I break. I try to speak, but I can only think about the father I'm about to steal from such young children. In the back of my mind, I remember Killorn crying after his father died. He was young, too. Excuse us a minute, wouldn't you? Maven's voice sounds far away as he speaks. Marina's still getting used to the excitement of court. Before I can glance back at the doomed father, Maven hurries me away. A few people gawk at us, and I can feel Cal's eyes following us out. I almost stumble, but Maven keeps me upright as he pushes me out onto a balcony. Normally the fresh air would cheer me up, but I doubt anything can help now.
Children, the words rip out of me.
He's a father!
Maven lets me go, and I slump against the balcony rail, but he doesn't step away. In the moonlight, his eyes look like ice, glowing and glaring into me. He puts one hand on either side of my shoulders, trapping me in, forcing me to listen.
Renald is a father, too. The Colonel has children of her own. Ptolemus is now engaged to the Haven girl. They all have people. They all have someone who will mourn them.
He forces out the words. He's just as torn as I.
We can't pick and choose how to help the cause, Mayor. We must do what we can, whatever the cost.
I can't do this to them.
You think I want to do this?
He breathes, his face inches from mine.
I know them all, and it hurts me to betray them, but it must be done. Think what their lives will buy, what their deaths will accomplish. How many of your people could be saved? I thought you understood this.
He stops himself, squeezing his eyes shut for a moment. When he collects himself, he raises a hand to my face, tracing the outline of my cheek with shaking fingers.
I'm sorry, I just...
His voice falters.
You might not be able to see where tonight will lead, but I can, and I know this will change things.
I believe you, I whisper, reaching up to hold his hand in my own. I just wish it didn't have to be this way.
Over his shoulder, back in the ballroom, the receiving line dwindles. The handshakes and pleasantries are over. The night has truly begun. But it does, Mayor. I promise you, this is what we must do.
As much as it hurts, as much as my heart twists and bleeds, I nod.
Okay. You two all right out here?
For a second, Cal's voice sounds strange and high, but he clears his throat as he pokes out onto the balcony. His eyes linger on my face.
You ready for this, Mayor?
Maven answers for me.
She's ready.
Together, we walk away from the railing and the night and the last bit of quiet we might ever have. As we pass through the archway, I feel the ghost of a touch on my arm. Cal. I look back to see him still staring, fingers outstretched. His eyes are darker than ever, boiling with some emotion I can't place. But before he can speak, Evangeline appears at his side. When he takes her by the hand, I have to tear my eyes away. Maven leads us to the cleared spot in the center of the ballroom.
This is the hard part, he says, trying to calm me.
It works a little bit, and the shivers running through me ebb away. We dance first, the two princes and their brides, in front of everyone. Another display of strength and power, showing off the two girls who won in front of all the families who lost. Right now it's the last thing I want to do, but it's for the cause. As the electronic music I hate clatters to life, I realize it's at least a dance I recognize. Maven looks shocked when my feet move into place.
You've been practicing?
With your brother.
A bit. You're just full of surprises.
He chuckles, finding the will to smile. Next to us, Cal twirls Evangeline into place. They look like a king and queen should, regal and cold and beautiful. When Cal's eyes meet mine at the exact moment his hands close around her fingers, I feel a thousand things at once, none of them pleasant. But instead of wallowing, I move closer to Maven. He glances down at me, blue eyes wide, as the music takes hold. A few feet away, Cal takes his steps, leading Evangeline in the same dance he taught me. She's much better at it, all grace and sharp beauty. Again, I feel like falling. We spin across the floor in time with the music, surrounded by cold onlookers. I recognize the faces now. I know the houses, the colors, the abilities, the histories. Who to fear, who to pity. They watch us with hungry eyes, and I know why. They think we're the future. Cal and Maven and Evangeline and even me. They think they're watching a king and queen, a prince and princess.
but that's a future I don't intend to let happen. In my perfect world, Maven won't have to hide his heart, and I won't have to hide who I truly am. Cal will have no crown to wear, no throne to protect. These people will have no more walls to hide behind. The dawn is coming for you all. We dance through two more songs, and other couples join us on the floor. The swirl of color blocks out any glimpse of Cal and Evangeline, until it feels like Maven and I are spinning alone. For a moment, Cal's face floats in front of me, replacing his brother's, and I think I'm back in the room full of moonlight. But Maven is not Cal, no matter how much his father might want him to be. He isn't a soldier. He won't be a king. But he's braver. And he's willing to do what's right. "Thank you, Maven," I whisper, barely audible over the horrible music. He doesn't have to ask what I'm talking about. You don't ever have to thank me. His voice is strangely deep, almost breaking as his eyes darken. Not for anything. This is the closest I've ever been to him, my nose inches away from his neck. I can feel his heart beat beneath my hands, hammering in time with my own. "Maven is his mother's son," Julian said once. He couldn't be more wrong. Maven maneuvers us to the edge of the dance floor, now crowded with swirling lords and ladies. No one will notice we've stepped away. "Some refreshments?" a servant murmurs, holding out a tray of the fizzy golden drink. I start to wave him off before I recognize his bottle-green eyes. I have to bite my tongue to keep from shouting his name aloud. Killorn. Strangely, the red uniform suits him, and for once he managed to clean the dirt off his face. It seems the fisher boy I knew is entirely gone. "This thing itches," he grumbles under his breath. Maybe not entirely. "Well, you won't be in it much longer," Maven says. "Is everything in place?" Killorn nods, his eyes darting through the crowd. They're ready upstairs. Above us, sentinels crowd a wraparound landing, lining the walls. But above them, in the carved window alcoves and little balconies near the ceiling, the shadows are not sentinels at all. "You just have to give the signal." He holds out the tray and the innocent glass of gold. Maven straightens next to me, his shoulder against mine in support. "Mare?" "My turn now." "I'm ready," I murmur, remembering the plan Maven whispered to me a few nights ago. Shivering, I let the familiar buzz of electricity flow through me until I can feel every light and camera blaze through my head. I lift the glass and drink deeply. Killorn is quick to take the glass back. 1 minute. His voice sounds so final. He disappears with a swish of his tray, moving through the crowd until I can't see him anymore. "Run," I pray, hoping he's fast enough. Maven goes as well, leaving me to carry out his own task at his mother's side. I head toward the center of the crowd, even as the feel of electricity threatens to overtake me. But I can't let it go yet, not until they start. 30 seconds. King Tiberius looms ahead of me, laughing away with his favorite son. He looks to be on his third glass of wine, and his cheeks are flushed silver, while Cal sips politely at water. Somewhere to my left, I hear Evangeline's cutting laughter, probably with her brother. All over the room, four people take their last breaths. I let my heart count out those last seconds, beating away the moments. Cal spots me through the crowd, grinning that smile I love, and starts to come toward me. But he will never reach me, not before the deed is done. The world slows until all I know is the shocking strength within the walls. Like in training, like with Julian, I'm learning to control it. Four shots ring out, paired with four bright flashes from the guns high above. The screams come next. 20. I scream with them, and the lights flash, then flicker, then fail. 1 minute of darkness,
That's what I need to give them. The screams, the yelling, the stampede of feet almost break my concentration,